to episode 4 of The Deuce, very special episode.
Oh, very special. It's our
I'm Bradley.
And I'm Jeremy.
And you are listening to the first ever Listener's Choice episode. And the listeners chose Mission Impossible 2. And thank you so much.
Yeah, there were many... many viable and probably, I'm going to say, preferable candidates that were on our Facebook page, which you should check out. So The Deuce on Facebook. We put out a survey and people voted. And much like the mad scientist, Dr. Forrester, at MST3K, you sent us this movie.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot. So you might hear a little... moaning a little bit in this episode, but if you haven't seen Mission Impossible 2, I would say go watch it.
go watch it now.
Yeah, you can watch it on all your streaming services for $2.99. You can rent it, or you can buy it if you're really ambitious for $2.99. Or there's two options to watch it free. You can, if you have the Cinemax Go, Max Go app, you can watch it there. Or look at your coasters and see if you're using Mission Impossible 2 as a coaster.
Yeah, you may also go look at like your secondhand stores. there are probably piles of these lying around.
Oh my God.
Being used as doorstops and whatever else.
So go ahead, pause, and enjoy what we enjoyed for what seemed like 5 hours, but was actually 2 hours.
Yeah, so we watched the sun go down. It was it seemed like it took a lot longer. In all fairness, though, and we'll warn, we had to pause this a lot as we went while we kind of unraveled things that we were just seeing.
And I was bandaging it up, my head, from all the blood of me banging it against the wall. But
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah.
So it's time to drop the deuce on Mission Impossible.
Dropping the deuce.
Dropping it. Go ahead, Jerry.
Okay. So the movie, we open in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And we are starting to get somebody discussing. It's the sneaky fucking Russian from Snatch, from the movie Snatch. I never know the actor's name.
He is from Snatch.
But he's a very good. You know what? I like this actor. Okay. He usually plays these just grandiose
characters. Does he always
look
like that? Because I said he looked like Mark Twain.
Yeah, he does look like Mark Twain. Okay. But he doesn't usually look so, like, put together. A lot of times he looks like he's just kind of disheveled. But, I enjoy this actor anyway. So that's, at least we opened pretty good with him. So, mm-hmm. But he's talking about, and we don't know what it is yet, but he's talking about doing tests and talking about they created Bellerophon and Chimera, which will come into play later, so we're kind of in the dark about what the hell he's talking about. But we see the scientist then. He picks up a gun that has like a
vial,
like injector gun.
Injector.
And injects himself, and you hear kind of this exposition that he, or this voiceover that he has like 20 hours. Mm-hmm. To get wherever he's going.
Right.
So before it's too late and it's irreversible. So, of course, he's on a commercial airline heading to Atlanta.
He got on an airline.
Yeah, he got on the airline.
Yeah, right.
And he meets, he's been talking on this voiceover to somebody named Dimitri, who is his contact.
Yes.
So he meets up with Dimitri, his contact, who is actually Ethan Hunt, played by Tom Cruise.
Right.
They're
flying to Atlanta.
Yeah, and he has...
And they're somewhere in the Rockies.
Yeah, because they come from the West.
Yeah.
So, but he had like a bag that had something in it, and so we don't quite know what it is yet.
We hope it's the plot of the movie.
Yeah, it should be there somewhere. And so on the plane, the oxygen masks come down. They say there's some cabin pressure issues, and we see the pilot, who can't remember the actor's name, but he was in a lot of things for a little while. Like, he was in Moulin Rouge, and he was in Van Helsing.
The pilot?
Yeah, the guy who played the pilot,
okay.
Who was...
The bad guy.
Yeah, we later find out it's his character Hugh in this one, so...
Yeah, yeah.
So they say, hey, there's some cabin pressure issues. we're going to drop these oxygen masks. And they come down, everybody puts them on, and then you start seeing everybody passing out. They're actually gassing and knocking out all of the people on the plane.
I don't know how you do that, but sure.
You fill, instead of oxygen tanks, you tie it to something else, probably. But so the pilot basically sets the plane to start to crash. He aims it at the mountains and starts letting it descend, so it'll crash. Ethan Hunt then comes back to the scientist, who's like, Dimitri, I don't know what's going on. He's, I don't know why you keep calling me Dimitri. And basically does a weird Tom Cruise grin thing, and you realize that it's not him.
It's not him.
So he... karate chops the scientist in the throat, then breaks his neck.
I'll give Tom Cruise that like, he plays that not as him.
Yeah.
Like, he plays it as, you know, the bad guy, kind
right.
of, in a way.
Right, exactly.
There's something wrong with him.
Yeah, and then he stands up, and then he rips his face off to reveal himself to be Doug Ray Scott underneath of it. And so, for those of you who are not familiar with Doug Ray Scott.
Is it Duggery or Doug Ray?
I thought it was Doug Ray.
Okay, sure.
Or I'll go with it. Doug Ray? Who cares? So, for those of you not familiar with this actor, he actually, after Russell Crowe turned down
Wolverine
because he was doing Gladiator, their next pick in line was Doug Ray Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And he was this close to doing Wolverine, and he said, no, I'm going to be in one movie of Mission Impossible. I'm going to be the bad guy in Mission Impossible, because clearly they'll keep coming back.
Clearly.
And so he turned down Wolverine for that.
Smart choice.
Yeah, and Russell Crowe was like, well, hey, there's a guy I've worked with before, Hugh Jackman. He's kind of unknown, but give him a shot. And, you know, from there it was history.
Sure.
Now,
the other bad guys, there's other bad guys in the plane, too. And one of them is Tom Cruise's cousin in real life.
Yeah.
And that's actually played by Ethan, the guy that played Ethan on Lost. Now, if Ethan on Lost is on your plane, you chose the wrong plane. Do you know what I mean?
That thing's going down. That should have been a good sign.
Right?
Somebody walks on and goes, oh, hell no, and turns around and leaves. We get to see a daring skydiving escape at this point. So they are going through like the levels of the plane, trying to get out. And so we see
well, the plane crashes.
Yeah, as they dive out, the plane starts heading towards the mountain and it crashes. And so that's when we start to realize, oh, hey, they were basically erasing whatever traces of something.
Sure.
And then it cuts to Ethan Hunt, again played by Tom Cruise, rock climbing, leaping from rock ledge to rock ledge. And kind of...
Now, Ethan Hunt. Tom Cruise did 90% of his own stunts in this movie, which is important to know because there are, like, three stunts in this movie, I swear.
Well, there's a lot of, like, you get, like, your fighting and your things like that.
Tom Cruise's rock climbing.
But kudos to Tom Cruise, though.
Right.
Because that's, like, a lot of people don't even want to, because, I mean, it can be risky if he gets injured.
John Woo, who directed this movie, did not want him to do his own stunts.
Right.
I think he wanted it to be more, you know.
Ridiculous,
actually said, because he's hanging from a cliff, I actually said... there's close-ups of Tom Cruise's armpits while a cover of Ika Waika Waye plays.
Yeah, it is. It's playing Ika Waika, I assume on some Zune or whatever the hell he's got. we have to suffer through that.
Right.
And you're right. I mean, much like Tom Cruise's own career, now we have to watch him dangling from the ledge for what seems like years. And as he finally climbs up to the top, a helicopter shows up, loads a rocket and fires it.
It just fires it.
And it just sticks in the dirt in front of him.
And he's just like, yeah.
And he's like, oh, that's normal. And he walks over,
unscrews it.
Yeah. Unscrews it. And it has glasses with like a heads up display. And it's your normal Mission Impossible kind of trope.
These Oakley sunglasses.
Well, yeah, they have to be Oakleys, mm-hmm. brah. That was like your 2000s.
this movie did come out in 2000, yeah.
So it says the mission is called, it's Mission Chimera.
Yeah.
Recover Chimera and assemble a team. Team of three.
Mm-hmm.
But two of your three, or one of your three, has to be a person named Naya Nordharf Hull.
Yeah.
Or Hull.
Hull.
Who is a thief. And so then it says, you know, blah, 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 classic. It's got your classic self-destruct in 30 seconds right. gag or 3 seconds. And he throws
Anthony
the
Hopkins
glass.
Is yeah. the guy. That's
yeah, Anthony Hopkins is narrating it just right. to keep things calm. So he then throws the glasses and they blow up and goes into the Mission Impossible intro credits. So.
Again, I'm fine with all this, by the way.
Yeah.
Nothing is really that bad.
No. So we go forward to, now there's a party. So it's got a party
in Spain.
Well, there's a lot of people who are, you know, kind of shabbily dressed and
mm-hmm.
dancing flamenco. Not shabbily, but just kind of loosely dressed, dancing the flamenco. Mm-hmm. And there's a tapas bar, so I'm pretty sure they're in Spain.
Right.
Ethan is walking through the party and he sees Naya, who's played by Tandy Newton.
From Westworld.
She yes, played Maeve. Yes.
She's wonderful on that.
Right. And she's great in this, I think, too.
Well, she's not like terrible.
Yeah,
no,
I think she's fine. And
I think she's kind of playing, you know, what she is known to play.
Yeah. So he gets eyes on her, and then she also spots him. They kind of eye hump for a second, and then...
that sequence is slow motion eye hump.
Yeah, it's all slow motion terrible. Like, just slow...
Oh, I'll eye hump you.
And then, and I actually think that Tom Cruise and her are, like, slightly sped up compared to the rest of it.
Oh, probably.
But then, like, somebody's flamenco dress basically goes by, and she's gone. So she's just gone at that point. So we see her using her badass thieving skills. She's
yes,
wearing this black
she is
dress
a thief.
With gloves that she puts on.
Mm-hmm.
So she's kind of skulking around, has some cool gadgets to help find a hidden vault. And it's by a bathtub.
Right.
And she finds it.
That's where I put all my
well,
stuff
yeah,
by
you
a
know,
bathtub.
Nothing could get in there.
No.
Nothing watery or anything. It's going to be fine.
No.
So she finds a hidden
no
vault.
No mold.
Yeah.
It's protected by the scrubbing bubbles guy.
Mr. Clean, damn you. So she gets in there, and of course, all of a sudden, Ethan somehow sneaks up behind her.
Right. Like, he's so creepy.
And he
like,
just
right
kind of like douchey talks to her for a minute. But then people are coming in, and so she pulls him into the tub. And so he's like laying on top of her. But she's still going to be doing her thieving, so she asks if she can be on top.
Right.
He says, either way works for him.
Well, he's used to be on the bottom.
Right, yeah, for the most part. But and usually, I mean, in all fairness, usually he's crying a lot more when he's making this much sexual small talk with a woman.
Yeah.
So kudos to him for keeping it together.
And also, Maeve. She's also used to working with robots.
Yeah, yeah. So,
so
she's
perfect casting.
Yeah,
right now, right there.
And so she kind of gets these jewels out. He directs her to the right ones, and then the alarms start going off. Mm-hmm. Everybody rushes them. Ethan reveals that he's the security engineer for this place.
Oh, right.
And so that must be like another undercover thing of his. So then they... they get away. He makes her give the jewels away. And so she leaves, and she's driving in, like, on the Spanish, like,
right.
road system.
The Spanish roads.
So
and
they start talking
driving
car
in these
to car.
Wonderful cars, right?
Yeah, the fancy convertible, whatever, going
yeah, whatever.
High speed, side by side.
Right.
Talking to each other because you can't hear that over. You can definitely hear that over the motors. So they're yelling back and forth about stuff, driving recklessly the whole way. He says that he could wipe her record, and she goes, "Oh bloody hell, you're a spy!" And he kind of, you know, says, "Yeah, he is." And then immediately she starts smashing into his car for whatever reason. Like, are spies right. really that hated that you can't just say, like, no thanks? Well,
he gave up that information really quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a spy? Yep.
Yep, you know.
Yep.
So then there's this massive John Woo driving demolition derby scene that goes on forever.
Yeah, and during that, Tom Cruise, when he, like, is hitting people,
yeah.
like, on the road, he keeps, like, Canadian apologizing to yes. people.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Like, sorry yeah. there, eh?
Because they try to show that Ethan Hunt is, like, a guy with a heart. Like, he doesn't want to hurt innocent people, which is great. Like,
right. And it's good because not a lot of robots have hearts.
Right. He may become a real boy one day. So then their cars, and of course there was, while they're driving and talking through this whole thing, there were no cars. Now it's like freaking rush hour. So now there's cars everywhere. They finally, after they get through all this junk, their cars hit and lock together and spin out of control.
Spinning
while they,
out of control.
While they slow motion stare at each other through all of this, just so that they can lock eyes or whatever. but anyway, their cars spin out of control, much like Tom Cruise's career around
You're
now.
You're terrible.
For what seems like forever.
Yeah,
again.
Right?
Yeah. And so,
perfectly together.
And so it stops, and like her car kind of is teetering over the edge.
Right.
The door opens, and she falls, and she's just hanging onto the door. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he leaps to it, which is the smart bet, is to leap on the car barely hanging on.
Right.
He pulls her up, at which point they kind of start lightly making out.
Right. They like, make out Cronenberg crash style.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, ooh, that turned us on.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, in all fairness, like, the last time I got in a fender bender, I did get a little aroused.
So it fades out, fades in, and she's, like, she performs her own Mission Impossible. Which is she tries to have sex with Tom Cruise in the next scene, right?
Correct. So then they're snuggling.
Yeah,
which is
right.
What you'd expect. Just kind of exchanging some pillow talk, and he needs to go and meet up with his contact. He meets up with Anthony Hopkins, who I think is actually just playing Anthony Hopkins, but I'm not sure.
It's Anthony Hopkins.
So
they're like, we need someone for some dialogue to explain stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, is Anthony Hopkins available? Actually, they wanted to have Ian McKellen play this character.
Oh, wow.
But Ian McKellen was
doing X-Men.
Magneto, so
it's very possible he just really didn't want to work with Doug Ray Scott.
I think so.
And he was like, oh, you're in that movie now? Yeah, I'm gonna go do X-Men.
Oh yeah.
So he meets up with Anthony Hopkins. Anthony Hopkins shows Ethan the video of the scientist, basically the voiceover stuff we heard before. The scientist relates that he wasn't gonna fly without Ethan. And so Ethan wonders, well, why'd he get on the plane without me then?
Right.
And they said, well, we sent one of our own people to go meet him.
Right.
But when you're not there, there's another guy who they keep saying something about him doubling him.
Right.
Well, he's doubled you several times before, which sounds exactly like what I think is happening.
At this point, I thought, oh, my God, this is a Mission Impossible world, right?
Yeah.
Like a spinoff of Westworld.
Oh, because of Anthony Hopkins.
Just like, this is all Maeve. Fake. It has to be fake.
It makes
Please
sense.
Please let it be fake.
It makes sense. And so they said, okay, well, they've sent this guy, Sean Ambrose, played by Doug Ray Scott, because all your villains should be named Sean, to double him and ask if he's... he says, hasn't he doubled you before? And he says, yeah, he's doubled him a couple times in the past. So he knows Ethan very well. Well, now it turns out that the whole reason they need Naya, you thought it was because she was a thief, but it turns out that Naya used to date Ambrose.
Right. Her ex.
Yeah.
Right.
So they want to send her in to infiltrate and to find out exactly what's going on.
Ethan says she can't do that. She's not prepared for this. And then Anthony Hopkins gets all sexist.
Yeah, well, yeah. And then Anthony Hopkins says, to go to bed with a man and to lie to him. She's a woman. She's got all the training she needs.
Whoa.
Whoa.
Calm down.
Dude.
To be fair, she just did that to Tom Cruise's character, though.
Well, right. But that's aside from the point. I mean, it's, she's allowed to do, you know.
Jesus.
Yeah, we were like, holy shit, Anthony.
Like, at this point, the script, I think, was written by Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, probably. Probably.
It had to be.
Bill O'Reilly and, like, Bill Cosby. Martin Shkreli. And, yeah. Anyway, but I put, cue the sound of every girlfriend who got dragged to MI2 in the 2000s questioning whether now was a good time to break up or not.
Oh, God. It's terrible.
So now he goes back and he shows Naya the pictures of, like, the airplane that went down and reveals it was done by Ambrose, by Sean Ambrose, and that's why they really need her is because... But he tells her, like, I don't want you to do this. I'd rather you say no.
Right.
Because I don't want to put you in harm's way. And she goes, you know what? No, I'm going to do it. Because she wants to make sure this doesn't keep happening or he doesn't do something stupid. So they set it up to make her look like she was arrested, at which point Ambrose, who's actually kind of obsessed with her, would go rescue her. Now, here's how it goes. They say, we're going to get you arrested. We're going to put all these things out on the newspapers, and then he's going to come rescue you. Then the next thing we see is a boat with her on it coming back to meet Ambrose.
I'm trying not to sigh.
Now, I'm sure there was probably some... I keep imagining there's probably some cool kick-ass rescue scene that was in there. Like, well, how could you not storm, like, Interpol and be just guns a-blazing? But no, they're just like... can we have her? Thank you. And just leave with her and, like, bring her back.
From what I read, actually, John Woo had a regular cut that was about 3 hours long.
Oh, God.
Which I thought was this movie, because this movie felt like 3 hours long. And so he had to cut a lot of scenes out. So that's why we're getting a lot of plot holes.
Yeah. So, and why it's like, the one scene cuts out with a voiceover into the next scene. There was a lot of... I think that's why we had to pause a lot, because we were like, whoa, shit, what's happening? Like, we were still dealing with one voiceover when the next visual piece had already started.
Right.
So then we see a couple shots of the team that Ethan picks. So he picks this Aussie chopper pilot named Billy Baird. And then Luther Stickle, who is their hacker, played by Ving Rhames. Who is obsessed with his fashion style.
He is very obsessed with his fashion.
So now they meet with each other, they meet in the outback, the Australian outback, because the villains are in Australia.
We have to remind you, we're in Australia.
Yes.
Blooming onions.
All the time, yeah. And they ride their own kangaroos. Correct.
Paul Hogan is there. No, he's not. Just joking.
Was he not Hugh? But they meet and they reveal that they had marked her with, like, a tracker so they could find where she was within 3 feet.
Yeah.
Like, the satellites could pinpoint her. So they are having trouble locking on to her, and then they realize where she is and then figure out where, like, Ambrose's base is. As they're doing that, there's this, like, slow-mo, like, the boat comes up. She is slow-motion walking up this pier. To Ambrose.
It looks like a bad Calvin
Klein. And just like movie audiences, the closer and closer we get to Doug Ray Scott, the more regretful she looks.
Oh, God.
Just like we do. And then there's this thing where her scarf, which you see is blowing in the wind the whole time, it finally flies off her neck and he just catches it with one hand next to her to dramatic music. And my eyes rolled
give me a migraine. I'm going to choke you. Like, he might choke her with the scarf. Yeah. What's he going to do?
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Maybe that's what they were going at.
I don't know.
But it was way too long. She walked forever.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ving Rhames is trying to pull up the satellite feed. All this is just taking too much time.
Correct.
I miss the flamingo dancers already.
Ethan delivers some random dialogue about the prize, what Bellerophon and Chimera were.
Oh, right.
Chimera was a mega virus that was like basically cobbled together from several influenza strains
yeah.
to make this mega virus. And then Bellerophon was the cure to that. It was the antivirus. And so they made them both at the same time. You know, and they wanted to... Basically, they would have the virus, and then they had the cure.
So, they would have the more corner market. If you're a fan of Pandemic, the board game, I think that color is the purple cubes.
Yeah, I think it might be the purple cube. I think it's the... what's the one? No, Australia's red. It's probably the red ones.
Oh, okay. It's the red cubes.
But that dialogue is just... It's like a two-second thing. It's just stuck in. Like, it doesn't match with anything.
A lot of... dialogue and then,
then we go back to Ambrose's base and we see his right hand man Hugh, who is the guy who was originally the pilot. He calls Naya's intentions into question. He thinks maybe she's a plant. Ambrose said he's suspicious but he's not concerned. And then, you know what, you think I would fall for this? And just for good measure, he cuts the tip of Hugh's finger off.
Right.
And so we will continuously see this bandaged finger for the rest of the movie.
His coke nail.
Yeah, he had a jagged fingernail on his pinky. So they go to the racetrack.
Oh, at one point, Dougherty Scott says, "Don't look so worried. We are halfway there." At which point I was like, "Oh my God, is he talking to us?" Like as moviegoers.
Oh, thank God.
Because I'm like, thank God, we're only halfway.
Movie's halfway
and
done.
Then I think we paused it, and we're like, shit, we have like an hour and 20 more minutes. And
yeah.
I'm like, oh, no. thank you, listeners.
So, Ethan, they go to the racetrack, and they're just watching some races. They win something. Ethan sends Naya an earpiece so that they can talk. And it's this, there's this thing in movies I don't get where he's basically, he says, you can talk as if I'm right next to you, if I'm right there. But in movies, when somebody's talking over an earpiece out loud, do you not look crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, if I saw somebody who was just all of a sudden talking to themselves, I'd be like, what the hell's happening?
Yeah.
I mean, especially before, we're talking like 2000.
Before
this
Bluetooth.
This was not Bluetooth. Yeah. So you couldn't be like, well, Bluetooth are crazy. It was probably just crazy.
To be fair, a lot of people talk to themselves at the racetrack. They're called bums. But,
well, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, she doesn't seem like the type. But so then we see they're talking and they get a bead on Ambrose, who's meeting with John McCloy, played by Brendan Gleeson. He's the guy who runs the pharmaceutical company. Who employs a scientist who had injected himself with Chimera. So they're meeting. So obviously Ambrose is planning something. And we see that Ambrose has this giant, like, SD video card that I'm sure is like had 1 megabyte on it at the time.
It was
giant. It was like a giant SanDisk card.
He puts it in an envelope, and I swear it's bigger than the envelope.
Yeah, almost.
You
yeah.
know what I mean?
It's like a zip disk. That,
yeah.
So he puts it in his left jacket pocket, which is important. So Naya picks it out of his pocket. And goes to place a bet for some horses and takes it over to Ethan, who's able to copy it. And it shows what the Chimera does. Basically, it's this super virulent strain that will kill somebody within about 37 hours. And we already knew after 20 hours, there's no going back through some expository dialogue earlier.
Again, there's after 20 hours of this movie, 20 minutes of this movie, there's no going back.
Right.
We had to continue.
It is the Chimera of movies. So Ethan tells Naya to get out of Australia. And she is saying no, and he's like, please, you have to. So she's trying to figure out how she's going to get away. And Hugh is trying to chase her down all the time. And... he finally gets to her and sees does not see Ethan. So that's good. So she's not in trouble there. But when she goes back and tries to put the card back in Ambrose's pocket, she puts it in the right jacket pocket instead of the left jacket pocket.
Oh, no.
And later, they even say that he obviously knows where it is. He says, can you grab the card? It's in my right jacket pocket.
In the right pocket.
So he knows something's up.
Right.
So now we see a shot of most people assume would be Ambrose's men.
Right.
We see McCloy getting into a limo, and he can't roll down the window, and he gets gassed. So,
remember the newspaper.
Yeah, and there's a newspaper. There's they went through the trouble of making a gag newspaper that said pharmaceutical CEO dies from rare strain of influenza.
At this point of the movie, I'm like, what? Like, you went all out.
Yeah.
Full con.
Right. This is a clear government overspending at this point.
Con on con. I mean, matchstick men.
And so then we go back to, so we assume that McCloy, because we see one of McCloy's guys out there. We see Tom Cruise's cousin is out there.
Right.
So that's where we're led to assume that's what it is. And so Naya starts running away. We cut back to Ambrose's place. So Naya's running away. She sneaks past a bunch of people. She gets around the corner and she runs into Ethan, who is just skulking and lurking around. And he tells her, no, it's going to be okay. I'm here. Let's figure this out. And then it cuts back to McCloy in this, in this clean room or whatever, in a hospital. And he's where's all the other...
he's a boy in the bubble.
Yeah, he's like, where's everybody else? And they said, oh, no, there's nobody else around. They won't come near you. And we see it's the scientist who we thought died earlier. Right.
Who looks like Mark Twain, who now actually looks like one of the pieces from Guess Who.
Correct, yes. He's dressed
like Max or like Paul or whatever from Guess Who.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And he, so the scientist basically tells him, hey, you have a chimera in you. And McCloy immediately wants the antidote. Because he's saying we need to take care of this, and he goes into this really long, unprompted exposition about how they were going to make a virus so they could sell it, and then sell the antidote and make hand over fist with all this. Ugh. But so it's like
this movie isn't endorsed.
It just kept going and going. Like, there was not that much prompting dialogue wise to get this out.
Right, the FDA endorses.
Yes, and then at the end, you see. Brendan Gleeson get knocked back out. The scientist leaves the room, pulls his mask off a la Scooby-Doo to reveal it to Ethan. So they kidnapped him and basically tricked him. They didn't actually give him chimera. They tricked him into thinking that so he would tell them everything.
So what is this, the second or third pull of face thing off?
It's second.
Okay. This is ridiculous.
So then, wait a minute, if Ethan's there, then who's with Naya?
Wait, who?
Ooh. And so all of a sudden it cuts back to Ethan telling Naya, you have to go. No, just stay with us. Keep working and doing this. We'll figure this out.
Right.
Makes her feel safe. She runs back inside and pulls the face mask off again.
Whoa.
And it's Ambrose. And so he knew what was up. Although at this point, we had this really interesting question about this. So,
yeah,
at this point, nobody from Ambrose's camp has seen Ethan or any of his people that he would recognize. Hey, that's Ethan Hunt. He's doing all this. Nobody has connected any of that crap. But somehow Ambrose is like, I'll dress like Ethan Hunt.
I mean,
on the chance that it's, that maybe it's Ethan. Maybe it's not. We'll see how she reacts.
There was a deleted scene of Brendan Gleeson pulling his face off and revealing that it's just Brendan Gleeson. So, look for that on the DVD.
Ambrose only has the cure for Bellerophon, it turns out. That's what he got off the airplane. But he needs to get the virus, so which is why he was trying to talk to McCloy to get a hold of it. Now, Ethan and Ambrose start planning this heist. Ethan's trying to figure out how to sneak in the building and be stealthy, like in, as we've seen the shots of the first Mission Impossible movie. People parodied it to death where he's, going down on the zip line and, you know, hovering.
Well,
and,
Luther is out there saying, hold up, I'm not ready yet. Hold off, I'm not ready yet, because he's using dial-up to dial-up his AOL. That's how, like, technology is so crazy. Yeah.
Well, and at the same time that Ethan is planning all this, Ambrose is basically saying exactly what Ethan is going to plan, because we're supposed to understand that, and which
is
not
a cross cut of
although
exposition.
It's not like the worst scene with this, though, because it's kind of interesting to be like, wow, Ambrose is so deep into Ethan's head. He's like supposed to be kind of almost like his Professor Moriarty kind of character, where he knows him, or they think similar ways, and he's like, okay, look, he knows Ethan is going to go for misdirection and avoid confrontation.
Yeah,
he doesn't
but I think
hurt.
You could have just done that in a scene and get it over with. I mean,
yeah.
It's just,
it seemed to go on. They kept cross-cutting, and it went on for a long, long, long time. Yeah. So Ethan basically skydives through a vent, because these vents cannot stay open for more than 40 seconds. So Ethan skydives through this vent. He has to get the... he has to get the cord off and back up through the top before it's done. And they have this kind of interesting thing where he goes down, he hovers for a second, and this guy could have seen him, but doesn't. So Tom Cruise pulls himself back up on his cord and gets out of view, and then drops down. They get the cord up. So it's very timed.
Right.
Like you'd expect.
It's actually a pretty good scene as far as stunt work is concerned.
Right.
And
I appreciate,
at this point.
The scene was pretty good.
Yeah.
As the cross-cutting with Ambrose, who's still yammering on somewhere else, talks about, there are two places that Ethan has to make to destroy the virus. He has to destroy it in the incubation room, which seemed to be easy enough. He gets in there and just burns it, because they have, like, a termination protocol. And then he has to get to this injection, or this room where they have three injection guns.
Right.
And he has these things where he can lock it to it and just basically shoot it into fire.
I do love the suit that Tom Cruise is wearing. Yeah. I said he looked like Mike TV.
He did look like Mike TV.
And I said, hey, look, I'm the first human to try to destroy this disease. Oh, look at me.
No,
look at me,
wait,
Mom.
Stop.
Police murder.
So Ethan destroys two of the injection guns. Or the vials, and he's on to the third. But Ambrose, the same while all this is happening, basically busts into the place. He and his people start shooting all the guards, and they just go brute force route.
It takes him like 5 minutes.
It's like they're out of communication.
It takes
Ethan
like 7 years to get through.
It's like out of communication with Ethan for 5 minutes, and so they can't talk with him. And about 45 seconds, Ambrose's guys just kill everybody and make their way where he is. And now
he's to be
it
a bad
would have
guy.
Been, it would have been all done, except Tom Cruise has this, like, or Ethan has this wistful flashback of the scientist for no reason. and he's just like, no, and shakes it off. Now, if he wouldn't have been doing that, he could have gotten rid of the last one. But instead, that gave Ambrose.
Does your person have a mustache? Oops. You're the scientist.
That gives Ambrose enough time to get there, and his guys open fire, because, of course, this isn't an all-glass room.
Right.
And so
perfect.
They start firing. And it's like shoots out the floor, so the gun falls, virus gun falls. Ethan's trying to obtain it and shoot back and everything, and the gunfight is just very John Woo-ish.
John Woo,
a
two
lot of
guns.
A lot of you spinning around with your arms outstretched in the direction, kind of a thing. Although I do think it's cool, like where he's trying to pick the gun up. Mm-hmm. And he keeps trying to make it to it, and like either missing it or having to like jump out of the way of it.
Yeah,
of some gunfire. So there's some banter, basically reiterating what they've told us twice before about the virus. You know, with Bellerophon and Chimera, and basically just same shit. Now we've heard
we
like
know
twice.
This. We know it. It
just in case you were coming in late, I guess. I don't know.
We watched your flashback. We seen all this.
Yeah, and so they just keep going.
By the way, this movie lacks a lot of humor. There's there's no humor. In
yeah, Ving Rhames is supposed to be He's supposed to be our comic relief. And man, it is just not happening.
You don't think he can do comedy?
I think
you Chuck and Larry. He's hilarious in that. Anyway,
I think he can do comedy. This right. just it just was not. Yeah, I think his it's part not was not written no. so well. But then they're like they start firing, and of course it's like spinning the gun along the ground.
Yeah,
and they have to tell him stop. You're going to like spread the virus, and so.
At this point, just spread it.
Yeah.
Put us out of our misery.
Just do it. So then Ambrose places Ace in the hole. He's got Naya there with him. Oh, yeah. And all of this, too, when it's all happening, like somebody, like, I don't know, drops a bomb or does whatever to Ving Rhames, basically blows up Ving Rhames' van.
Oh, that was, it was like a hand that just went, oh, there's someone outside that we've never seen before that just
right?
sticks a bomb underneath the van.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And so they blew up Ving Rhames' van, and we think he's dead, but nope, he's alive. so it was just an odd moment. But Ethan tells Naya that you know Ambrose is going to kill you as soon as you give this virus to him because he sent her over there to pick it up. So she's bringing the gun back to him because she knows that Ethan won't shoot her. So he's like, hey, look, you know Ambrose is going to kill you as soon as you hand that over to him. And Ambrose says... You know women, they're like monkeys. They won't let go. They won't let go of one branch until they're holding the next.
Jesus.
Whoa. Like, this, who wrote this?
Seriously.
I might have been Bill O'Reilly.
I think it was
right.
Bill O'Reilly.
I don't know, man.
Bill O'Reilly does the book on tape of this movie.
Of the novelization.
Of the novelization. Of
Bang said, Bang said, Ethan.
Bang. I banged her like my gun.
So, seeing this impossible situation, she's going to die one way or the other, so she decides, hey, I know what to do. So she injects herself with the Chimera.
Smart.
Yeah, smart.
Yeah,
I mean,
sure.
Makes sense. And she, because she's banking on the fact
the
that Ambrose is going to need her, because now he
the
can't kill her.
The mission impossible.
Wink. So Ambrose is going to, is going to kill her, or is not going to be able to kill her, because he needs her alive.
Right.
That Ethan will be able to save her, you know, go get all this stuff. So it's like she banks on a lot of things here. So at about that point, the guards show up and start doing this gunfire or this shootout with Ambrose.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, okay, God, I can't get, you know, he's trying to figure a way to get both of them out. She knows they can't. So he blows a hole in the wall and basically tells her he'll come back for her and just jumps out.
Parachutes out.
Yeah, parachutes out. And so...
If Johnny Five was with him, he'd just, like, hang glide up, but...
Correct. So we cut to Ambrose hours later dropping her in a populated area in Sydney.
Right.
Because he said, you know, in a couple hours you're going to become Typhoid Mary. Because you're going to, basically, when the virus starts spreading or incubates...
That was her stripper name, too, I think.
Typhoid Mary.
Please welcome to the stage, Typhoid Mary.
Typhoid Mary. Oh, she'll give you something, fellas. So she...
Syphilis.
Syphilis, more specifically. She's got Chimera. So she is in Sydney kind of wandering around. Ethan goes to Ambrose's hideout to get the Bellerophon so he can save her. And now this is when apparently John Woo bought every bird in the hemisphere because then now doves are everywhere going forward. We probably won't be able to call them all out, but just consider if there is a camera on somebody, there are probably doves. Either slow motion flying or just sitting by people now.
I think, like, Tippi Hedren can't watch John Woo movies. She's just, no, not going to do it. Because they're terrible. Not because of the birds.
No. So Ambrose returns and meets with McCloy to make a sale of Chimera. So now they have a vial of Bellerophon and they have Naya's blood. So those are the last vials.
So they're doing the whole switcheroo thing that we're going to release this virus.
Yeah.
Right.
And so...
Because we got the antidote.
Yeah, so now we have these so we can control whatever again. So McCloy offers them money, like $37 million or something like that.
Yeah, go for it.
But they said, oh, we want more than money. We also want stock options.
Oh, yeah.
So just when I thought that Ambrose couldn't be more boring character, he's asking for stock options. And the thought was that... The stock is going to go. He's released Naya into public. The virus is going to go crazy. He'll be the only one with the antidote. McCloy will. And his company's stock will go through the roof.
Right.
At which point, you know, they'll start doing their options. Mm-hmm. So,
the whole bad guy thing. Of
yeah. And so.
Releasing a virus.
Because I think this is around the time, too, when you started to see a lot more, like, where they had villains who are more like. Oh, I'm not just brute force. I'm also a brain. You know, and so you started to get a lot more.
Well, then what's with this movie, then?
It was trying real hard.
Try harder.
So Ambrose plans to create an outbreak and profit from it, basically.
Right.
Which we know.
The Brendan Gleeson character, and they're trying to get the stock. So actually, then, let me say this real quick, that Brendan Gleeson's eyebrows did 100% of his own stunt work.
Oh, wow.
It's true. I read it on IMDb.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very good.
It's crazy.
They talented eyebrows.
Yes, very talented eyebrows.
They're actually 1 year older than Brendan Gleeson.
True fact, at this point in the movie, I wrote pointless, pointless, pointless.
I had written birds, birds, birds.
I think I threw my notebook like, what, three times?
Yeah, like at the end, I was having to put it back into your hand. But I wrote birds, birds, birds. So Ethan has managed to knock out the guards very kindly all the way through this. And that we start seeing more and more doves flying around. So then he takes a bomb, throws it by the glass or throws it by the door that everybody's behind, and detonates it. So now the door has blown open. A couple guys got taken out.
Right.
And Ethan, there's the doors just to set the scene. Doors on fire. Doves are flying through it, and Ethan walks by it in slow motion all one shot. It is the most John Woo shot ever.
Oh, my God.
And I said, some bro just got a woody watching that.
Sorry. I love that.
So Ambrose sends him after Ethan. Ethan is hiding, but a... damn dove gives him away. So many doves. A dove gives him away. And Hugh knows he's over there.
Sponsored by Dove Lotion.
Hugh knows he's over there because a dove is flying, which means that there's soon to be gunfire. And so
fire and gunfire and doves.
So Ethan kicks Hugh, and they go to draw their gun, but Hugh has a drop on him, and he goes, get your hands out there, put your hands up, and he goes, if that's what you want, and then as he pulls up his hands, he has a hand grenade that he drops, that it blows a bunch of stuff up, there's smoke, and we kind of lose sight of them. So then Hugh says that he's coming back, he's got Ethan, so they come back, and Ambrose and is basically taunting Ethan, and Ethan's just grunting and grunting, and so he's beating up Ethan. He just keeps grunting and staring like he's scared. He shoots Ethan. Ambrose shoots Ethan.
Right.
And then as he's laying there, he realizes...
We assume that he's dead because he shot him.
Yeah. And it's,
which I was like, damn it, Tom Cruise is dead. That means we got to restart the whole movie over again. I'm not going to fucking do that. No way.
So he's looking and then he realizes... Uh-oh, he's got a bandage on his finger, like Hugh did.
Oh.
Ooh. So then he pulls, he pulls off like old man Dither's mask, and Hugh is underneath of it. So Hugh is laying there. Yes, right, the mask things again. Sorry. Hugh is there, but there's tape over his mouth, which is why he wasn't able to speak.
Okay, well, John Woo did direct Face Off, and there's been so many faces that have come off in this movie.
Yeah, right.
At this point, this movie makes The Sting look like Follow That Bird. I mean, the con after con after... It's just so ridiculous. Yeah. Oh.
So then Ambrose turns around and realizes that the guy who he thought was Hugh was gone with the Chimera and Bellerophon. And it was actually Ethan who rips off his face and, you know, throat thing, and he's running away with this. So Ethan has grabbed it. He's running away. He's fighting guys on motorcycles on his way out. And then he steals a motorcycle and escapes. So everybody else starts chasing him, and then Ambrose chases him on a red motorcycle.
Ooh, a red motorcycle.
And said, guys, just screw and get over with it already.
Oh, God. Like, at this point, it's called The Fast and the Bi-Curious.
So, now Billy, they're tracking. They finally manage to track Naya, and they realize she's going to throw herself off a cliff.
Yeah.
She's wandered way far away from Sydney to some cliff faces where she's going to throw herself off so that nobody can get hurt.
Oh, I thought it's because she was in this movie.
That, well, okay, so I actually think it's one of three things. A, she's trying to prevent the virus from spreading.
Right.
B, she heard one too many sexist comments and she just wants to end it. Or C, she's following the rest of the audience who now is trying to throw themselves off cliffs.
So there's this big chase.
Yeah, it goes, on, it goes on and forever. It goes on forever. Way, as a matter of fact, all I wrote was motorcycles dueling, yada, yada, yada.
At one point, the motorcycles, they fall off the motorcycles.
Well,
right?
Yeah, like when they're doing things like at one point he just spins on the tire. Like, there's a lot of where he just kind of gets out of their way. Once he's spinning on a tire, which creates smoke from the burnt rubber, and they can't see through it, and he turns, but they pull into the intersection and get hit by a semi, which is how Tom Cruise's cousins dies in this. And then so much sighing.
Sorry.
And then finally, it's just like, and another one just like flips over another car, so on and so forth. But in the end, Doug Ray Scott, like, there's one where he's coming at him and he's shooting at him. So Ethan jumps off the side of his motorcycle and is dragging his feet on the ground while the motorcycle is going forward.
Oh, he's the best balance in the world.
Yeah, best balance. And it's just using his bike as a shield.
Carrie Strug would be proud.
And so, and his bike. Now, he shot a car three times earlier and it exploded.
Right.
His motorcycle has been shot like 1,000 times and nothing has happened. It's still running.
Yeah.
So they finally, Ambrose and Ethan's vehicle or motorcycles, they ramp off and they basically jump at each other and catch each other in midair.
Right.
Ambrose's motorcycle just like skids out. Ethan's flies in the air and explodes, much as their hearts did when finally getting the chance to embrace one another. Which I'm sure they've been dying to do this whole movie.
Yeah.
So now they... These are my next notes. Now they fight and fight and fight.
Oh, God.
Ambrose pulls a knife. Fight, fight, fight.
Oh, God. The knife to the eye thing is pretty cool.
Yeah, there's... They do a scene where they... Because, like, Ambrose pulls his knife now. Because before they're just punching and stuff. And the work is not bad. Like, I'm...
No.
For what it is. Like, the fighting stuff is pretty good.
Yeah.
There's a few awkward fight things where, like, that look better with, like, Chow Yun-Fat doing it or, like, whoever. Where he, like, Jet Li, where he, like, puts his
knee up.
Knows
what
somebody who's, like, a martial artist. And Tom Cruise is not. But he does pretty good with his stuff.
He's not bad. Yeah.
But there's like some really things where he had to get up high and do whatever where you can see they were kind of like awkwardly robotically doing them.
I think I put
them.
Kicking and slapping more than a Three Stooges moving.
Yes, very much so. So Ethan gets the knife and could kill Ambrose, but he didn't. Beat the ever-loving shit out of him instead. So because that's the thing, Ethan doesn't want to kill him.
Keep in mind that Ving Rhames and Billy found.
Yeah, they find Naya in the meantime.
Yeah, Naya.
So they get back there. He finally beats the crap out of Ambrose, who is just knocked out. The helicopter lands. We see Naya is kind of getting ready because she can get the medicine. Ving Rhames, Luther is running to him, to Ethan, who has now turned his back on Ambrose and walking over there with the antidote. And Ving Rhames stops. And you realize Ambrose suddenly has generated a gun out of somewhere.
Yeah.
So he has a gun and he's going to shoot Ethan. There's this whole kind of we look at each other and glance and give looks and try to figure it out. And then the sand starts to blow away right at Ethan's feet.
Oh,
and there's a gun. I assume it's a gun he lost earlier, but like there's just a gun that forms out of sand.
You know, from another fight.
And so they do this thing where he throws the antivirus to Luther. He drops or he kicks up the gun into the air out of the sand. And, of course, it's covered with sand. There's sand in the gun parts at this point.
Yeah, right.
But he grabs the gun in midair and starts dropping and shoots Ambrose on his way down.
Yeah.
So very John Woo. Bang, bad guy's dead. The girl is saved. The virus is destroyed. And he starts a new vacation with Naya. Right.
At the end of the last line of the movie, Ethan says to her, "Let's get lost." And that's the best advice of this whole movie.
Just get lost.
Just get lost.
Get lost.
Because I got lost through the whole movie. It's true. Anyway, Mission Impossible 2, you've been deuced.
Deuced.
So that's what we thought of it, but other people, let's see what they have thought about it. This is a review from Dave Slicer. He gave it 10 out of 10. He says, "John Woo, the master of slam bang in your face action films such as Hard Boiled and The Killers, really knows what the audience wants when it comes to action. Mission Impossible 2 is simply the best action film of 2000. Tom Cruise returning as Ethan Hunt is having a lot of fun, returning to the role which he made in 1996. The action scenes blew me away, and there's never a moment that I felt cheated out of the film. I would not have a problem seeing this again and again. John Woo simply kicks butt."
Nice.
Yeah. And this one, they gave a 1 out of 10.
Ooh.
From Crow Robot. It says, "Lame James Bond ripoff. I really liked 1996 Mission Impossible. The first film was tight, smooth thriller that barreled along at warp speed and was a nice break from conventional Hollywood action thrillers. Two pretty much is a conventional Hollywood thriller.
Yeah.
Almost nothing from the first film has been picked up here. Tom Cruise, ? Yes, he's back. But he's not a spy anymore. He's James Bond minus any cool gadgets or charisma. The awesome theme music, ? Gone. Replaced with the horrible rock score. The action is typical Hollywood, slow motion gunplay and martial arts. Ugh, I hate this movie. The acting and dialogue is lame. The techno rock score even lamer. And the action scenes are mundane. Here's hoping Mission Impossible 3 won't be a cringe-inducing disaster." Which I've never seen... three. I mean, I barely saw one.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you know what? Like, I didn't see one till much later.
Right.
I
don't really prefer the Mission Impossible movies.
Nor do I. You know, I saw this movie once before.
Yeah.
But the funny thing was, I was on vacation in Florida, and somebody came up to me and handed me like a CD of the music to this. It was like a sampler thing.
Oh, okay.
Where they were like, "Hey, this movie's coming out. Check out the music."
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, and so I have it still somewhere where I was like, what?
Right.
I just had this
Which
thing,
is funny
like,
that you say that, because there's a Metallica movie at the end of this movie, and it actually got leaked through Napster back in 2000, which caused the whole Metallica against Napster thing. So there you go.
Thanks, Mission Impossible 2.
Thanks, Mission Impossible 2. You screwed that up, too. Hey, great.
And
wonderful.
And the Limp Bizkit did use the Mission Impossible thing for the music underneath of it.
So now we're going to go to our five questions.
Five questions.
Here we go. Deuce.
Okay. First question. What do you think is the best part of this movie?
The action sequences, like the knife, when he drops into the biochem place.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, you go now.
I honestly I think that Tom Cruise and Tandy Newton.
Tom Cruise
Newton
is fine. Yeah.
And Tandy Newton, I think they do fine with their acting.
They're
like
fine.
I enjoy that. And I agree with you. Like some of those stunts were good, but here's the thing, it's like you had some good stunts, some good acting, but it was just put together. Yeah,
correctly.
It was just this kind of like plastic. Mm-hmm. Just not a great product.
No.
There were good aspects to it.
I don't
just
even
overall
think it was
it was
a
not
fine product to
No,
push
overall
forward.
It was a pretty poor product. But there were some okay pieces to it, some aspects to it. But yeah, and I thought it was really – I did. I will say I think it's cool when an actor will do their own stunts, especially when there's – I mean, he did things in here that took practice, took time. He had to train his body to do.
Yeah.
And so kudos to him. And that can be dangerous for an actor because you have a stunt double because
that's true.
They're trained to do these things, and really that's your tool, that's your instrument. You don't want to damage
right.
it. So the fact that he put that in there and he probably had to
and
take safety stuff
to
and
do
he had
that.
To, yeah.
Like
so,
from
so kudos to him. I don't think Tom Cruise is a terrible actor given the right circumstances. So
there was rumors that he was a big diva on the set of this. Like
well,
this
I'm
is where
sure
it started.
This is where it started?
Yeah, kind of.
Oh really?
You know, like, yeah. Yeah, but to do your own stunts, I'm thinking you kind of have to be.
I can see that.
Like you said, you're protecting your body.
I could see that. Mm-hmm. Reboot, continue, or cancel?
Well, obviously it keeps going and going.
Yeah.
So I guess we can't really answer that. I think they answered that for us.
Yeah.
Personally, I would have kept going. Because I think there was something better out there.
That's exactly what I said, too. I said continue because I know you can do better than that. And I would hate to see this be what that series went out on.
Right. Exactly right. Or the J.J. Rabbi J.J. Abrams.
Yeah. Although with this one, I really was like, ooh, like just cancel. Like I'm really tempted to make that happen. But
that's true.
Okay. Do you think it stands on its own?
No.
Really? Why?
Yeah. It's bad. It's a bad movie. I don't think it stands on its own. Why? There's just so many plot holes.
Yeah.
There's so many times I'm like, what was that?
Yeah.
Why is this here? Why is that there? I just don't think it's strong.
See, I said, yes, I think it can stand on its own. Because it's the same thing that Crow Robot said in his review. It's just a spy movie. It's a generic spy movie that they shoehorned a Mission Impossible into, basically. And so,
but it's not a great spy movie.
No, I don't think it's a great spy movie.
I don't
think
it can hold up to that.
I don't think it's a great spy movie, but I think it's a spy movie, and I see other spy movies that are one-offs that are just like this. True Lies is out there, and as much as I like True Lies, as classic as that is, it has a lot of the same kind
You're
of,
right.
like,
I
really,
love,
come on.
I love Johnny English.
There you go. But no, that's what I mean, though. It's like there are movies that are can be seen as similar that stand up. And like True Lies has humor to it to help it along. But if True Lies didn't have that, it would be an eye-rolling whatever.
Yeah.
So I think this movie could stand on its own, but only because it's so generic that it didn't even have to be Mission Impossible. You could have called it something else and had different characters. And I think it could have been a movie that people would have gone out to. It would have probably not had as much success as Mission Impossible 2 did, but it would still have existed.
I just don't agree, but that's okay.
Okay. Would you watch the first one?
Yeah. Yeah, I would probably watch the first one only because I'm interested to see if that holds up. Because there's a lot of this that doesn't hold up.
Yeah.
But that's through, like, plot holes.
Yeah.
That didn't happen through the script and stuff. I'm wondering if... I don't know. I'm just kind of interested to see, because I haven't seen that forever, if that holds up. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. Would you?
No. So, this movie... So, I actually liked the first one a lot when I saw it when I was younger.
But I don't remember it.
I didn't see it. I actually didn't see it till shortly before... this one came out, okay. And I think I caught it on, like, HBO or something. And I didn't see Mission Impossible 2 for a while after it came out, and mm-hmm. I didn't see it in theaters. So, after I saw Mission Impossible 2, when, like, Mission Impossible 3 came out, I was like, eh. Like, no thanks. Like, I just... It killed
like the third Matrix movie? Or like,
it killed my, like... I was I liked the first one.
Yeah.
And I was excited to see the second one eventually. And then when the second one happened, I was like, you know what? I'm not excited to see the third one anymore. And so I really don't care.
You've seen this before.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I really didn't care to go back and see the first one then either. Like,
you've not seen Mission Impossible 3?
I think it's been on in the background in my place before, but I think that's about it.
Okay.
But I don't really know what happens or what's going on. I just know Simon Pegg's in them. So.
Yeah.
Which is great, but not enough of a draw for me to actually pay attention.
Right.
So, I mean, really, this movie turned me off from the entire franchise.
Oh, yeah, no. But that doesn't mean I don't want to go back and watch the original.
It makes me not want to.
This movie, okay. Does this movie make me want to go back? No.
Yeah.
But I kind of want to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I get you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, two words to sum up this movie for you.
Pointless birds.
They are pointless birds.
Or take away the birds and just put pointless twice. I mean, it's a pointless movie.
I know.
There's a lot about this movie I just want to punch something. Like, it could have been so much. It could have been like a thrill ride. It could have been like action after action after action. Not slow motion after slow motion, horse race, slow motion, action.
But this was kind of from that age where, like, it was all the rap metal that was turning into, like, we started getting, like, Ballistics X versus Sever coming out.
Okay, but what are your two words?
My two words? Woo, brah. It was a John Woo movie, and it was like, it was just a John Woo movie.
Yeah.
And I don't think it was a particularly good John Woo movie. Like, I'll give you Face Off, and I'll give you, like, Broken Arrow even. And those things, they're cheesy and they're whatever, but they can be fun.
But I feel like this was trying to be that, and it didn't go over the line like that.
Yeah, John Woo's not my cup of tea, really, anyway.
But I would want it to be more cheesy.
But yeah, but John Woo's not really my cup of tea, but this didn't... I thought this was even below his standards.
Oh, God,
and
yes.
some of those doves were CGI.
Really?
Or they were like CGI, or scoped in after. They're like
Are you
put
serious?
In afterwards? Yeah. The one that flew through the flame door was not there. Yeah, I know, right? They couldn't even
you're
do
making
a real
me sigh
dove.
Again. I thought we were done with this movie, but you're making me sigh.
Well, we are done now.
We are done. So, bottom line is, what do we say about Mission Impossible 2?
Like any good deuce, flush it.
Flush it. Correct.
No. Go make your own decisions about it. It's correct. Not for me. So now, just to remind everybody, keep, you know, going, following us on the Facebook page, or you can download the episodes at thedeucepodcast.podbean.com. You can also get it at Google Play, iTunes, on Stitcher, or there's an RSS feed from Podbean that you can put to any one of the sources you want.
And we got some cool stuff coming up. We got our first series coming up in our next episode that's going to deal with baseball movies.
Yep,
because it's baseball season. So we're going to do the next three episodes will be baseball sequels.
Yep,
so.
And one of those We will have our first guest.
First guest, so I'm excited about that. So stay in tune for that. But we're going to say deuces out.
Deuces.
And the sequel is King.